The hardest thing is the great shows, because you do a great show, do a killer show. People are waiting for your autographs, and you're taking pictures, and it's great, right? And then you go to McDonald's, and no one knows who you are. Can you take that difference? Can you adjust to that? How bad do you want this thing? Whatever you are not willing to give up, that's what it's going to cost you.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, I speak with Kevin Lapine. Now, Kevin is a hypnotist. We're going to talk all about what that means, what it is, what it's not, but we're going to kind of dive deeper into just being not just a hypnotist, but being somebody who has a show in Las Vegas. It's a almost nightly show. I think there's a night or two each week that he doesn't perform. But what's it like not just to, you know, do hypnosis, which is an interesting thing in itself, but to then have a show in what the crazy place that is Vegas. I really, really enjoyed speaking with Kevin. He's going to talk about how he learned to be a hypnotist. He's going to tell you that he thinks darn near anyone could do it. He's going to talk about his show, how he doesn't get burnt out doing it night in and night out, what it's like to have a long-running show in Vegas, because he doesn't just have a hypnosis show. He has the longest-running hypnosis show in Vegas. So something to be said there. Definitely a really cool thing. He's going to kind of talk about the beginning, the middle, on how he kind of worked his way up into headlining, just what he hopes for the future. This is a really, really fun one. You know, I didn't know very much about hypnosis at all, but I think a lot of people look at it and are a little bit frightened by it. Like, is he going to make me do crazy stuff? And I really like what he says there about making sure that those that he hypnotizes are the stars of the show. So I think you're going to really enjoy this one. As you're listening, go ahead and click that subscribe button on Apple or Spotify. Leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. That really helps a ton. Leave a written review on Apple. It helps even more. Follow along on Instagram, Facebook, all them places. Not enough podcasts, but here is Kevin Lapine. So Lapine, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for agreeing to join me. I'm really looking forward to talking to you about hypnosis. That's what you are. You're billed as America's favorite hypnotist. So that's a big billing for sure.
That is really awesome. And having the longest running hypnosis show in Las Vegas. I do the show Hypnosis Unleashed. We're downtown Las Vegas at the Four Queens. Being able to have the longest running hypnosis show, and literally, I mean, I'm a kid who grew up, you know, all around the Detroit area, got to live in New Orleans for a little while, and then I get to live my dream of being a headliner in Vegas.
Well, I love that. And I want you kind of just to start at the beginning. What created that passion for entertainment? And was it always kind of in this, you know, magic? I don't even know if you want to consider it magic. That may be a big box to open already, but what made you want to get into entertainment?
I wanted to be a surgeon. My parents make me do this. I honestly, this is my passion. This is what I loved. I had a huge stuttering problem until I was about 15 and a half, 16. I actually came through a lot of different versions of being bullied and a lot of different abuse. The stage was the one place I felt comfortable. It's weird. I couldn't do anything interpersonally. Like, you and I would freak me out. But standing in front of 100 people on stage was the only place I felt comfortable. And it was just that feeling just kind of grew. When I was 16, I got picked up by an entertainment company. So I did costume characters for, you know, for kids' birthdays. So I was Barney for your little brother's birthday. Or for copyright reasons, I was a purple dinosaur.
Yeah.
You know, but it just, and I got to work with a lot of weirdos. But fun weirdos. I mean, the guy who ran the company, this guy would set his minivan on cruise control. And if there's nobody on the expressway, he would actually jump to the back, grab a costume, run back up front and get dressed while driving. A complete lunatic. But, you know, but there were also these really, really energetic people. These people had a lot of positivity and who were trying to, to do something. And because I was doing that, I got into clowning. Clowning actually got me into magic. I only got into clowning because it meant I could do more shows. But you weren't wrong, man. Magic was the gateway drug. I started doing some magic in the clown show. The magic kind of just worked for me. I don't know how else to say it, but like a deck of cards just felt natural. And then, doing that for a number of years, I got to work with sideshow performers. We're talking about the piece behind me. You're talking about interviewing a strong man. I mean, I used to work with guys who actually were in the 10-in-1 show in Coney Island. And then I started working with hypnotists. And when I was 25, excuse me, when I was 20, I got into a course for social workers to learn hypnosis. And it just kind of kept growing and growing and growing.
I love that. And you've kind of done what a lot of my guests have done in the past, but you've kind of combined it all into one person. So I've actually talked to people who run these costume companies and have the ice princess and the Italian plumber, again for copyright reasons.
Exactly.
And then a lot of magicians and things like that for sure. But I mistakenly asked you about magic, but I want to ask you that specific question. Do you consider, the hypnosis and what you do? Do you consider it a magic act or something else?
No, not at all, except. So, no, completely not at all. Totally wrong. Well, except for this one thing where you're completely right. I learned something doing magic. And the difference between magic and hypnosis is actually happening. I'm really hypnotizing you. There is no magic trick to it. It just is. But when I was doing magic, I figured out something. So magic is a trick, right? If I do a magic trick, you know it's a trick, right? But for one second, for just one second, when you see that magic trick, you have an honest emotional reaction. For one second, you laugh, or for one second, you clap, or for one second, you're just amazed. Now, after that second, your brain starts going, well, I mean, it had to have just been a trick. But that was what magic taught me, was if you can create a moment and feel emotionally connected to that moment, that's where it all comes from. So, no, the hypnosis show isn't a magic trick. But the emotion, making people laugh, making something genuine, making a connection, that's universal in every performing art.
So you've done all these other things. What made you decide that hypnosis was something that you wanted to not just do, but as you've said, create a show around it and one that is longstanding?
So it was my friends being smarter than me. So I would work at this point in time, I'm touring. And I'm doing a lot of colleges and I'm doing a lot of comedy clubs. In comedy club A, I'm doing my comedy magic as a middle act. So I'm the 20, 25 minute feature. Comedy club B, I'm headlining doing hypnosis. I like magic. I'm passionate about magic. I love magic. I couldn't write a 26th minute of magic that was genuine. And you look at great comedy magicians, the amazing Jonathan, who is a dear friend, Harry Anderson, a dear friend as well, Matt King, who's amazing. These guys, you could give them a deck of cards and they're going to do an hour and a half and have you rolling for an hour and a half. That wasn't where my personality naturally led. And my friends were pointing out, when you do hypnosis, man, you're having fun at an hour. You're having fun at 75 minutes. You're having fun at 90 minutes. You're having fun still. So why are you working so hard on something that isn't fun for you when you can do something that really fits what you're doing? And as soon as I realized that, the rocket ship kind of took off and I never looked back.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And that's what a lot of people are searching for, just something that they excel at and that they enjoy. So I'm happy that you found that for sure. But I want to talk about kind of what hypnosis is and what it's not, because I think that to a lot of people, that's kind of a scary thing or something they just don't know a lot about. And when people don't know a lot about something, then they form
They
judgments that
avoid it.
aren't always positive. So that's a really, really big question. But what is hypnosis, and maybe more importantly, what is it not?
Yeah, let's just kind of talk about what hypnosis isn't for a minute. So, hypnosis isn't, the Hollywood portrayal, but the Hollywood portrayal is never accurate. Even when when Hollywood does a true story, it's always based on a true story. Because, you're always going to twist things to fit a narrative. Hypnosis, first of all, is a natural state. If you've ever fallen asleep at night, if you've ever woken up in the morning, you've passed in and out of different states of hypnosis. The most common, and it happens to you during the day, you get lost in a daydream, everything else kind of vanishes for a few minutes. Or you're driving, especially late at night, you're driving in your neighborhood, you're driving somewhere you've driven a million times before. But did you stop at that? You were focused on the road. You were focused, but you don't remember the fine details of that. Or you're supposed to drive somewhere, but it's on the path to work. And you've missed your exit because you're driving to work now because your brain just kind of goes into that pattern. Those are moments of hypnosis. We've all slid in and out of it. People tell me all the time, oh my God, I didn't really believe in hypnosis until I saw you. I saw it on TV. I didn't think it worked like that. I'm like, you know what? On TV, I've seen people fly. None of us believe what we see on TV, and you probably shouldn't. So when you see it live, it's a whole nother experience when you understand these are real people who get put into this state of hypnosis. And in my show, my big goal is if you volunteer at Hypnosis Unleashed, I want to unleash your inner superstar. If I get you to volunteer, I want to make you look awesome. Because one thing I learned a long time ago, everybody in my audience doesn't know who you are, but they all know one thing about you. Oh my God, that could have been me. So if I make you look good, if I make you a star, if I unleash those parts of you, you're going to have fun and they're going to have fun.
I like that. I like the, the part of trying to make people look good, look like the star of the show, because I think that's what a lot of people are afraid of. I'm going to get up there. If they put me into a hypnotic trance, they're going to make me, balk like a chicken or something. And it doesn't sound like
I
that's your
am way
goal.
more creative than that.
Yeah.
It's of course you are going to do some fun, funny, and adult things at my show. But overall, if I make you look good, then you want to come back and bring other people. If I make you look like an idiot, you don't even want to tell people you did it. And there's a difference between, hey, we're going to do some stuff. You're going to be silly, but you're going to have fun. And me trying, and unfortunately, like we've all seen different types of shows where the performer really doesn't know what they're doing and they tend to degrade people that they're talking to. And it's funny because I work alongside some great, what would be considered insult comics. And these guys are loved by the audience. But one of their secrets is, while they might be poking fun at you, they still love you. It's a weird thing. But to watch those guys, I'm like, okay, I don't want to insult anyone. But where does that genuine love come from? And growing with that love makes it great.
And you mentioned that you do it mostly with volunteers. So maybe this kind of takes out the I guess the skeptics in things. But do because I've talked to psychics and people that do that kind of thing, and I always ask them, does it take somebody who is completely receptive for you to be able to do what you're doing? If you have somebody up there that just thinks this is a load of BS, is it something you still can work with, or is that can people go into these hypnotic states if they don't believe what you're selling?
So I forgot to ask you before we started. But G-rated, PG-rated, or PG-13? I won't go hard R, but where's my limit here?
You can say whatever you'd like.
Well, the reason I ask is because there's one line in the opening of my show. I make it really clear. Don't volunteer if the only reason you want to volunteer is to prove to me you can't be hypnotized, because you win. And I say that, and I do that because And I make a joke out of it. But the whole idea behind this is, look, if you don't want to go under, I can't force you to. I can't physically drag you up here on the stage and go, relax. Either you want to give it the shot or you don't. The funny thing is, the person who really, really wants to be hypnotized, a lot of times they're not the ones who go under, because they're the ones who you can watch on stage. And honestly, like everybody in the audience can read this person's mind as well. As you're watching this person sitting in the chair going, am I relaxing enough? I don't know if I'm relaxing enough. Wait, what did he just tell me to do? And they're putting so much pressure on themselves that they never get to relax. The person who goes under best is the person who walks up to me and goes, look, I have no idea if this is going to work or not, but I'll try. And it's weird, but because they don't care about the end result, next thing they know, they're the star of the show.
I
So
love that.
it's not that you can't be resistant to it, but you also don't have to be like some diehard believer in anything either.
Yeah. So do you think is I guess being a hypnotist, is it something that a skill that is just trained? Is it something that is a bit of an innate ability, or what's that look like?
I've often said a brain damaged chimpanzee can hypnotize people, and I know because I do. Learning hypnosis is easy. Learning the techniques of hypnosis is easy. Learning to work with people, that's a hard skill. The hardest skill that I have as a hypnotist doing, 250 shows a year, my major skill is once you're under. I'll do or two or three things with the whole group, and they're fun and they're funny things, but I'm watching you. I'm watching how you react. How do you do this? How do you listen to what I'm saying? How deep into this moment are you? And I start learning to target your personality. And when I say that, it's like there's some people who, even under they're going to be a little bit nervous. And so I won't put undue spotlight on them. Like if you still seem a little reserved or withdrawn, I'll make sure that what you do with the group. If, on the other hand, in the first couple of things, you have this really big personality, oh, well, now I can do this, this, and this with you. And it's funny because some of the people who walk up, their spouse in the crowd will go, oh my God, because they've never seen their spouse open up like this. But you create a situation. You create that hypnotic state and they feel comfortable and they open up on this big level. And yeah, I've had some people who have totally surprised me because they can be the mousiest, the most withdrawn, the shyest. And once they're on there, because those barriers are kind of down for a minute, they're not nervous about it and they just flourish. It's funny for the audience, it's fun for me. But I love watching whoever they came with in the audience, their eyes getting this big and going, oh my God, I didn't know they could do that. That's a cool feeling.
That has to be really, really cool. And I think this is probably the biggest softball question I could possibly ask. Almost a marketing ploy question. But if
Go for it.
somebody comes on a Wednesday and then they also come on a Thursday, are they going to see the same thing? Is it the same show twice?
You will probably see a very similar opening monologue from me because there are things that I need to make sure people know. But when people come back, I always make sure to throw in something different. Plus, I never know what a volunteer is going to do on any given night. What you saw somebody do last night, what could be will be totally different because it's a whole different group of people doing it tonight. And who knows how they're going to interpret it. And that's actually what makes it really funny for me too, is so my wife is the main assistant in the show. She does all of the hard work. But it's really funny because there's been many times where it's like after the show, I'm asking her, why did this person do this on stage? Did they misunderstand me? And she's gone, no, they understood you. But to them, it meant something different. And it's cool working with those personalities going, huh, Why are they doing that?
I mean, I'm sure there's a million stories and maybe hard to come up with them, but
Well,
maybe you've got one right away. But what's some interesting things that have happened while you're up there?
okay, just to go back for one second. We were talking about like
Please.
people's personalities.
Please.
And I'm talking, talk about like the big personalities versus the little personalities. On the count of three, you're in a rock band, you can play any instrument you want. And you got these big guys slamming the drums. You got, these girls rocking out with the guitar. And then one night, I'm watching a guy, and here's his whole personality.
Doing the, what is he doing, the symbols?
He's playing the triangle.
Oh, the triangle, yeah.
I'm telling you, you can play any instrument you want. I get to play the triangle. Wow, that's okay. We're not going to put one-on-one spotlights on you much. I've had so many. One of my wife's favorite moments is I do this thing where, the girls think the women on my stage think I'm ugly. The guys think I'm adorable. And we had a professional rugby player up there. And this guy grabbed me and huddled me on his lap. And I mean, like, he was not letting me go for anything. And he was ragdolling me. And my wife freaks out a little bit. And she's, going, let him go, let him go, let him go. And if I would have said sleep, he'd have let me go in a second. But the audience is laughing as I'm getting like ragdolled all over this place by a huge rugby player. It's funny, fine. I'll take the hit. It's worth it. But we've turned giant guys into Britney Spears. On any given night, like the other night, we had this guy who was covered in tattoos, and I told him the tattoos on the opposite arms were arguing with each other. Just playing into whatever's there. My favorite is probably. So if I've got somebody on stage and they've been married for a long time, I'll bring their spouse on stage. And then whenever their spouse says the trigger word, the spouse who's hypnotized will give their spouse a kiss like it's their first wedding night. And that one's a lot of fun because, we've got this image. Oh my God, you've been married 20, 25 years. You hate each other. No, man, you've been married for 20 plus years and you're going up there and you're still holding hands and going on dates. It's awe-inspiring. And then, sometimes we'll have a guy give birth. We'll have people fight over napkins. We're going to make it fun and funny.
What do you say to the people who listen to this or think about any kind of hypnosis and think it is just nonsense and that, okay, yeah, sounds all great, but I'm sure he, this is all just an act, and he, it's the same eight people on stage every night 'cause he pays them.
First of all, I wish we could afford to pay new actors every night. That would be fantastic. But that's also why, so thanks to social media, and man, you don't hear that phrase much anymore. But thanks to social media, we regularly put up pictures of our volunteers for the night, just because I want you to be able to see how many different people there are. And yes, there are some people who refuse to want to believe it. Okay, fine. I don't know why you came to my show if you just want to prove it doesn't work. It's kind of an odd, but then again, there are some people who go to magic shows just to prove they can figure out how they're done. But my goal in a show is I want you to understand. Like, I do everything I can to demystify it. I don't want it to be spooky and creepy. I want you to understand, here's why they're doing this. And by the way, if I can get them out of the audience and have them do this, I know 50 different people who do it for therapy. And if there's something you want to fix in your life, if this guy can be Britney Spears, you can quit smoking.
That's powerful. That's powerful stuff for sure. So I want to get to the, I guess, a little bit more about the show, and I want you to just tell us, how did you, I mean, how did you decide to go to Vegas? How did you decide to create the show?
There's so many answers that I want to give to this. And unfortunately, I've got to jump all the way back to being 16. Okay. So I did my first costume character and I got paid $40. And this was in 92, 91, 92, somewhere in there. I was 16, just about to turn 17. That was m as much money I made That $40 was as much as I got paid for working a full week at Little Caesars. So, okay, you know what? I'm done flipping pizzas. I got a new game. And it sounds dumb to think about a 16-year-old. Do you want to work in a pizza place or do you want to do this? But keep in mind, what I actually said there was, I don't want a stable job. I want to do this insane thing. And that was true through my entire career, is I was willing to sacrifice other things, safety, security, reliable income, health insurance, whatever, to build this entertainment thing. My wife, who graduated from Del Arte, she said one of her teachers told her, if you can do anything in the world besides performing, do that instead. You'll be happier. But if you can't do anything else, you're screwed because you're one of us now. When I was 25, I had the opportunity to go to New Orleans for 6 months. 6 months turned into 5 years. I knew no one in New Orleans. It was literally, I had an opportunity, or I could stay in Detroit where it was comfortable and easy. And the one thing I knew as I was leaving for New Orleans, I knew one secret. Detroit would always be there. I could always go back. And the 5 years in New Orleans were amazing. Katrina's what sent me back to Detroit. But in New Orleans, I got to work with great performers as well. I got to work with people who really built me up, started touring colleges. When I came back to Detroit, taking that whole world of experience, I was able to turn it into doing corporate shows all over the world. And after 5 years of doing that, I had an opportunity to come to Vegas for 6 months. And 6 months is now almost 15 years. And it's awesome. But the majority of it is how bad do you want this thing? And whatever you are not willing to give up, that's what it's going to cost you. And I don't mean to sound negative. I don't mean to sound mean when I say that. Because, yes, some people have made it while having a 40-hour-a-week job and a family and everything else, but it makes it a lot harder. I never stopped pushing for what I wanted. But there's also a big difference between pushing and being pushy. It's that difference between I'm going to achieve what I want, but I'm going to achieve what I want by working with you, not trying to step on you.
I think that's a important distinction for sure. And I think you've answered the question I was a little afraid to ask. Has the show been going on for 15 years? Because I know with Vegas and a lot of things, I mean, you can get specific enough that the longest running, monkey show on Tuesdays is 3 weeks or
Oh
something.
yeah,
So.
oh yeah. I am definitely the highest rated hypnotist named Kevin Lapine, of all time. No, so I joined Hypnosis Unleashed in 2010, and at that point, it already had either I want to say it had like almost an 8 or 9 year reputation already. And then I came in, and I was basically interning for him. That turned into one night a week. One night a week turned into one night a weekend subbing for the other guys. One of the guys decided he was ready to retire, so I took his spot. And then when the theater we were in closed, the other hypnotist, who's like a big brother to me, Michael Johns, he said, if you want to carry the name forward, you can. And so I did. And so Hypnosis Unleashed has been under my name for 12 years now. A little over 12 years, but it has a 20 plus year history here in Las Vegas of running consistently if we don't include COVID.
What's the interview look like to join this show? Did you have to hypnotize the person that was interviewing you? What's that look like?
Here's the biggest amount of honesty that I can give anyone. I was invited to the show by one of the people in it, one of the hypnotists. Had no problem bringing another hypnotist up on stage and letting them do one routine. And the guy really liked the one routine I did. He brought me up there to do one routine. And he invited me to come back the next night. And then he invited me to hang out. At this point, I was 35 years old. I had toured the world doing this. And I knew what I was doing. But you know what I didn't know? Anything about Las Vegas. And I basically became an intern. Like the next 6 months with them, I would seat people. I would take tickets. I would work the box office. I'd work as the assistant. I would work in the sound booth. I would work security. I would do anything they needed so I could learn. And eventually they said, look, you're doing like this stuff basically as an intern. What do you want? I said, I want your Dark Knight. And they gave it to me. And after about almost 6 months, of doing the show. So now I've been with these guys for a year, right? I asked them, why me? Why me? The hypnosis world isn't that big. You could have picked 150, 200 other people who would have all say they would die to have this. Why me? I said, because out of all of them, you're the first person to come here and ask questions, not to tell us how you would do it instead.
That's powerful stuff. I
It
think that's.
is. And it's this is a truth. I don't care what job you're in. I don't care what career you're in. If there is someone you look up to and you reach out to them sincerely with a question, and then you sincerely listen to the answer. Don't interrupt the answer. Don't tell them, well, that's not the answer I would have given because I would say do that. Listen, everyone who's successful, anyone who you think is more successful than you, well, I'll tell you one giant secret. There's more room at the top than there will ever be people to fill top positions, but only if you're willing to learn. And humility helps you grow more than anything else. Sincerely reach out, ask those people. You'll be surprised at how much knowledge they'll give you.
Yeah, well, I mean the passion behind it. I think that's it's easy to see why you've been successful, and I want to know why you think the show has been so successful for so long. I mean, Vegas is an interesting place where you're getting new people every week, so you're getting a fresh set of a potential audience. But it's also interesting where there's hundreds of shows people can choose from, and it's really easy for one just to be absolutely fantastic, but somehow just doesn't get the publicity. How has Hypnosis Unleashed been able to withstand 20 years and 12 years under your tutelage?
So the first thing you need here in Vegas, if you're going to have a show or a restaurant or a casino, and mind you, I'm like one of the smallest shows in Vegas, okay? But me and Caesar's Palace still have to do the one thing in common. I have to give you a reason to come back. Caesar's Palace isn't going to live if they can't convince you to come back. MGM will gladly take that customer. If I can make sure you're having a good time, word of mouth is the strongest advertising out there. My friend told me I needed to come and see you. Hey, we saw you 2 years ago when we were here. We had to come back. And one of the great things I'll say about the Vegas community, especially the smaller shows, we don't want fans. I've never wanted a fan. I want friends. When you come and see my show, I want to connect with you. And I want to connect with you in such a way that it's not, oh, we should go see that hypnotist again. It's, oh, man, we should go hang out at Kevin's show again. I'd love. And but there has to be a sincerity there. It can't be fake because audiences know when you're lying, they know when you're not being sincere. When you give them sincerity, they'll bond with you and they'll come back.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe it's just that passion behind it and wanting to be sincere and know that you're doing it among friends. But given that you're doing this night in and night out, at least 5 days a week, how do you make sure that you, I guess, remain fresh? How do you make sure that you're, because you're not going to be feeling super chipper every day. Everyone has their own mental health. So how do you, I guess, how do you make sure that every show that people are getting, I guess, the best, Kevin Lapine?
I can't give you the best day Kevin Lapine's ever had. I can give somebody that, but who knows when or what that'll be. But from bell to bell, from the start of the show through the end of the show, it's one thing I never forget. You chose to see me. Do you know what that means in Vegas? You chose not to see Carrot Top. You chose not to see the Topless Show. You chose not to see Cirque. You chose not to see Celine. You chose not to see Blue Man Group. You chose to come and see me. And so for that period of time, I owe you 100%. And the other reason I owe you 100% is tickets to my show are $35. Some people had to work almost 2 hours, maybe a little bit more to make that after taxes. Except you didn't come alone. You brought whoever you're dating with you. So now you worked almost 5 hours, maybe 6 hours to come and see my show. You could have gone to see a movie. It would have been a little cheaper. Special effects would have been way better. But not only did you choose to spend your money with me, you chose to give me your vacation time. Limited time in the most limited time. I owe you the best I can give you. I owe you that. That is my debt to you, and I will pay it.
So how do you make sure that that you withstand and you make sure that you're taking care of yourself too? You talked about people could go to a movie pretty timely right now. I don't know, exactly when this will come out. It probably won't be on theaters anymore, but the last Showgirl is in theater now. And it kind of talks about somebody who doesn't really know what to do with their life because they've been in the same Vegas show for 30 plus years, and now they're kind of burnt out on what they're doing, but they also don't know how to do anything else. So how do you make sure that you don't get yourself in that rut? You don't get yourself burnt out, but you also don't get yourself where you have no identity outside of those walls.
I've been really fortunate. I've been really lucky. Most of the performers that I've met throughout my career have been fantastic human beings. They've been very giving, they've been very caring, they've been very warm. I would say at least 85% of all the performers I've ever met have been that. Less than 15% have been jerks. But part of what makes the people who are happy happy is they have a world beyond what they do. They have other interests. They have other desires. They have other friends. They have other interests. If you turn yourself into a one-dimensional human being, it's a really, really sad life. And I have been fortunate that I've had great friends around me who have shown me the difference. And the trick is the first trick you learn has to be financial, which is how do you save up for when you don't want to do it anymore? As much as you're going to say that about The Last Showgirl. Well, the same is true for that accountant who's done it for so long, and then that company closes, and they weren't quite ready to retire yet. And they didn't really have a retirement plan either. They knew they were going to retire, but retire to do what? So it becomes that next question of, if you stopped doing this tomorrow, what would still ignite your passion? If you can't do this tomorrow, what would you start doing next week? And performers, doctors, accountants, anybody, factory worker, you've done that for 40, 50 hours a week, every week, for 40 years, maybe a little bit more. Now I'm telling you to retire and you're sitting home and there's no community around you anymore. See, this is what people forget is it's that community of people. Everyone I know who has retired successfully has retired, and most of them don't work for money. Some of them still work for a couple of bucks, but it's in doing something in a community they want to be a part of. This person was a CEO of this major stressful corporation, and now he makes minimum wage because they have to pay him to help out at the dog shelter, which he'd gladly do for free, but legally they have to pay him. But he's doing something he wants. He's doing something around a community. Those the all the lines about the old guys who are just sitting around playing golf. It's not about playing golf. It's about having a community around you.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying, about it being any job being a tough thing to move on from. But I'm going to challenge you just a little bit with that because, when you were talking earlier about how if you could do anything else other than that the person told your wife, if you could do anything other than entertainment, then do that. I do think that it's a little bit different just because an entertainer, they're built to do that. So I think that leaving that world and or being forced out of that world would be a harder thing because I
It
mean
is.
you can't entertain the dogs for only for
Yep.
so long. So I do think that that's a maybe a longer road down if you don't find a better solution.
But that's also if you are wise, and Lord knows, wisdom and performers, there's a combination that goes hand in hand. If you are wise, the audience in the mirror will tell you a lot of things. I haven't seen The Last Showgirl yet. I've read all of the descriptions and everything. There's a point as a performer where you go, oh, well, I've entered this stage in my life. I've entered this part of my career. How do I adapt to it? And what do I start doing next? If, and I would say as a performer, if you don't have an idea of what you can do next, you can find yourself in a really bad spot. But in our modern world, nobody's guaranteed a 40-year career doing anything anymore. And I think everybody always has to have in the back of their mind, what's something else that could make me happy as well? Like if for some reason I couldn't do the hypnosis show here anymore, yeah, I'd go back on the road a bit. I'd pick up more road gigs. I'd pick up corporate gigs, or I'd probably speak at more conventions. If I get to do it my way, my choice is do it until I want to retire. And then when I want to retire, I'll take the 12 gigs a year I want to take, and that's that. Then it becomes a what do you want to do, not what do you have to do.
I mean, it's easy to look at the show that you do, the passion you have behind it, and see all the positive things. Obviously, you get to do something you love. You get to entertain people. You get to make people happy. You get to perform and kind of be the star of the show as well. These are all really, really great things. And so we're gonna put those aside and realize that the bulk of what you're doing is amazing. What's the hard parts of doing what you're doing? I mean, you do have to do this night in and night out. It can't be all rainbows and butterflies all the time. So
No,
what's the
it's tough
challenging part?
sometimes. It can be tough sometimes. There are times you have small crowds, there are times you cancel shows. And that hurts. That's a huge ego drain. And there are nights where it's like, well, we did the show we had to do tonight. It wasn't, it's not the show I would have wanted to have done tonight, but this is what we had, so this is what we did. And I have to look at it like a baseball player. Now, as far as baseball goes, I'd be the greatest baseball player in the world with my home run stats. With my at bats, I'd be killer. Still gonna strike out once in a while. When that happens, you just gotta brush off that last one and get ready for your next at bat. And it's tough sometimes. It is hard to have that and to do that with a smile and to say, yeah, you know what? Okay, fine. Let's move forward with this. Now, it's hard to do a show on a day when you've lost somebody, but that's happened. My wife had to go on stage. She got notified from her sister as she was walking out on stage that their dad died. And it was just really, really unfortunate timing about when she got that news. It's hard, but it's the job we signed up for. And one of the hardest though for performers who don't have a great support system around them, everybody thinks the hard part is the tough shows. It's not. The hardest thing is the great shows, because you do a great show, do a killer show. People are waiting for your autographs and you're taking pictures and it's great, right? And then you go to McDonald's and no one knows who you are. But can you take that difference? Can you adjust to that? Can you mentally go from, I was just on top of the world and now I'm sitting here waiting for somebody to make me a Big Mac? And that's the problem a lot of performers have is how do you go from A to B? I'm lucky. I've got a fantastic wife. I've got fantastic friends who really made me look at the fact that yes, I'm passionate about it, but it's not an all-consuming thing. And it's a tough one to learn.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you sharing that. I can only imagine that has to be a humbling experience at times. So I really.
But it's also true, once again, across the board, any other field. You can go and do something amazing in whatever field you do, but nobody else in any other field is going to really understand it. So take pride in what you do, love what you do, be honored by it. Just surround yourself with people who don't let that define you.
Yeah, I think that's is a really important thing. For sure. And I want to kind of keep with your baseball analogy just because, I've talked to tons and tons of people that are doing really amazing things and people that are performers as well. But normally we're talking about, a show that they do this weekend or a show that they did in the past. You actually are doing a show today. So we've got you literally right now in the bullpen. So I want now you to talk about how you feeling about tonight? How you feeling about the show today?
Today's gonna be fun. I'm gonna go meet a whole bunch of new friends I've never met before. And we're gonna have a party together. And we're gonna have a great time doing it.
I love it. I love it. And tonight's people and all the people that come out and see you, what do you hope that they gain from checking out the show?
So the main thing is I want them walking out of there having had fun. You laughed, you had fun, you had a great time, and you're walking out in high spirits. And that's 95% about how I want you to feel. The other thing, that little 5% I want you to feel, is I want you to feel, oh, maybe next time I should do that. Or maybe, maybe looking at this hypnosis to help me do something, maybe I should look into that. If I can leave you with a huge smile on your face, that's great. If I can leave you with a big smile on your face, maybe feeling a little bit more hopeful than you felt before you came in, that's great too.
Well, let's hope the bulk of people leave your show with just that for sure. And this is the most interviewee question that I've got, and that is, if we're talking in 5 years, what do you hope? What do you hope that that you're doing at that point?
I've got a few different hopes. 5 years from now. So, Hypnosis Unleashed is 5 nights a week at the Four Queens on Fremont Street. 5 years from now, I'd love to be doing 3 of those nights and maybe having somebody else do 2 of them, just like how I was able to grow and have that opportunity.
No, that's awesome that you want to help that next person. I think that shows a lot of character for sure. So I want to, in wrapping things up, shout out the show again, how people are going to check it out, how people are going to get tickets, how they're going to follow along with you, just so they can, maybe they can't get to Vegas all the time, but they still want to check out your social media. They want to see maybe some of the fun things you're doing. Talk about the show and shout out all your social media.
Join me on social media. I've been really lucky. I think on everything, it's at Hypnotist Kevin. Join me on any one of those. Facebook, I'm really active on. Instagram, I'm figuring out. TikTok, I'm figuring out. But God, TikTok was great when I went when my wife and I went to Japan on vacation, because that was a cool way to see what some stuff was. So any of the social medias, please add me, follow me. If you have questions, reach out to me. But the show, go to hypnosisunleashed.com. We'd love to see you. It's recommended 18 and over. Any age can attend with adults. But we do use a lot of adult language in adult situations. But either come to the show, sit back and laugh, or take one of the best seats in the house, volunteer, and become a superstar.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
My greatest pleasure.
So that was Kevin Lapine. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Really fascinating guy. I learned so much about hypnosis and just about kind of the technique behind it. I certainly had no idea. I'm definitely gonna have to check out the show when I'm in Vegas next, which is just a few weeks away. I urge you to check out his show, Hypnosis Unleashed, if you're ever in Vegas. I'm sure he'd love to see you and love to know that you heard about him on this podcast. I will put the links to all his information in the show notes, his social media. I'll put a link to the website for Hypnosis Unleashed so you can go check him out the next time you're in Vegas. But I really appreciate you being here. Kevin, thank you for being here. If this is your first time listening or you haven't already, go follow along on Instagram, Not Enough Podcast, on TikTok, Not Enough Podcast, Not Enough with Jackson Enough on Facebook. Go leave that 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Leave a written review on Apple. That helps a ton. But if you do nothing else, catch us next week. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time, where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think, or hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.